Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Lots of warm texts from all around the country. People delighted to hear Paddy Cole and delighted to hear him sounding so well. And they're coming in from Ballycotton and Offaly and everywhere. And people memories of seeing Paddy everywhere from the old Submarine Bar in Perrystown to with Maurice Lynch at the Killeagh Carnival in the late 50s. And Mark Lean got in touch to say he's listening with joy to Paddy sharing his stories. And not only is he listening, but he's been chatting to DJ Curtin, who played with Paddy in the Big Eight. And DJ Curtin is listening from Vegas. Mark Lean, for those of you who don't know, is the Emerald Elvis. Isn't it mad all the same? There's probably a great drama in it that all those Irish fellas are out there living like on the outskirts of Vegas temporarily, the wives doing the school run and all that. Anyway, we're going to talk about a very different kind of music now. On Friday, it will be, can you believe, 30 years since the death of Nirvana's Kurt Cobain. And in its own way, it was a seismic moment for a generation. I'm joined now by music journalist Eamon Sweeney. Welcome, Eamon.
Good morning.
Will you explain first to people, Eamon, why Nirvana mattered so much? They meant so much to people and they still do.
Absolutely. Smells Like Teen Spirit is just one of those songs that it's, you know, the second it comes on, it seems to just cause this sugar rush of excitement with a you know, a brand new generation as well. I think it really, Brendan, comes down to the songs. The songs are just amazing. the Nevermind album, produced by Butch Vig, who was kind of in Garbage, just has this, it's the perfect marriage of noise and melody. Hmm. But the melody, the space of the music, it's just extraordinary. I think that's why it's aged so well all these years later. 30 years. Like any anniversaries, they kind of creep up on us. Yeah. They kind of make us feel, oh God, is it that long ago? But maybe we should try and reframe it. Think of like, you know, kind of we've lived this long.
We're still standing. Yeah. I suppose he's become kind of, as people often do, an icon in death and everything. But when he was alive, Kurt Cobain had become an icon. Like, there was something kind of special about him, wasn't there?
Yeah. And Brendan, you know, lest you forget, happened ever so quickly. Like, literally, they did a short Irish tour, kind of in with Sonic Youth. This would have been August 1991.
Yeah, and was what 20 people would have watched them in Sir Henry's, kind of, yeah?
So I believe, yeah. Yeah. And the Top Hat in Dunleary. I think it's like this Irish indie kid's equivalent of being in the GPO in 1916. Yeah. For your credentials. I wasn't at either. My wife was at the Dunleary show. But then when Smells of Teen Spirit came out, literally about 10 days later, suddenly it was everywhere. I remember hearing it first on Dave Fanning on 2FM. And then anytime you switched on MTV, it was just on constant rotation. It had that classic, you know, memorable video as well. And it's just one of those songs. And then I remember kind of like when it came to kind of discos and parties, I think it was one of those songs that became so notorious that people go so mad and break things that it was kind of banned from certain situations. But yeah, no, talk about an anthem.
And then enormous success for like only a few years, really.
Pretty much, yeah. You see, they were on a smaller Seattle label called Sub Pop for Bleach, which is kind of their debut album. But it was the second album, Nevermind, when they were signed to Geffen, that kind of really exploded. And there was only one after that. And I suppose if you go down, you know, there was maybe a bit of live stuff and the very famous MTV Unplugged in New York. It was a short career. I do think the question, though, wouldn't have been great if he'd lived so long. Michael Azarad, who wrote a great book about Come As You Are, the story of Nirvana, in a New Yorker piece that kind of did the rounds again a few years later, says in it that as soon as he met him, one of the first things he thought is, this guy's going to die young. And this was something also that his bandmate said, something that his own mother said. So the pain of what he went through and the combination of all these physical and mental ailments coupled with heroin addiction, coupled also, and this is not really spoken about too much when it comes to Kurt Cobain, the morbid fascination with guns on that dark side of American culture and the availability of guns.
Yeah.
And basically, he obtained, it is said, he obtained the gun that he used to shoot himself.
Yeah, we won't get into details of that. Yeah. So died on April 5th.
Yes.
And his body not discovered for 3 days then. So it was April 8th in 1994. Is that kind of, you would call it a JFK moment for kind of our generation and younger.
Yeah.
People remember where they were, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I remember very, very, very vividly that I was at a Whipping Boy gig in the Buttery Bar in Trinity, and Whipping Boy being a suitably loud and dangerous Dublin post-punk band. And I was kind of going to catch the last bus, and somebody I knew from college told me, I thought this has to be some kind of joke. Despite the fact that there was these overdoses and alleged attempts, in the recent past. And I stayed up that night to watch MTV News because, you know, there's no internet, no Facebook, no Twitter, all these things that would be our go-to platforms in this day and age. And that some late night edition of MTV News kind of confirmed it. And over the weekend, I'm not sure how, but there was this impromptu vigil in the Phoenix Park by the Wellington Monument. I think at 2 o'clock on the Sunday. The news filtered through late on Friday night. With about 1,000 people there, and I remember actually being a lovely, quite beautiful kind of event. And people lighting candles and singing songs and acoustic guitar, and a very, you know, sad, obviously, but a very beautiful occasion in a strange way.
They were supposed to be playing in the RDS that night, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
A gig scheduled.
Kirsch OD'd in Rome in March 1994. And the remaining European dates then were cancelled or postponed. I don't think there was any effort to reschedule that. But I know of people who were ticket holders for the show and who, to this day, still have those ticket stubs. Yeah. Like, you could get refunds. But I think that the take-up on that was minuscule.
Yeah. You saw them, did you?
I did. I did in the Point Depot in June 1992 with a really good bill with Teenage Fan Club and the Breeders, kind of a great kind of 90s pop dream bill.
Yeah.
And they were great. It was joyous. Kurt says nothing. Like, you know, there might have been a little bit of a thank you and a hello, but... You know, there's not, you know, this kind of criticism people after a concert is kind of, they didn't talk to the audience that much, you know? I kind of often think, we're not going to see spoken word, you know? But what I loved about it is every song kind of crashed into the next. There was no pause for breath. There was that, you know, Sucker Punch, punk rock. Basically, they played all of Nevermind, a few bits and bobs from Bleach. It was great. It resurfaced on YouTube. It's on YouTube now, the whole thing. Whoever videoed that, and it's actually surprisingly good quality, probably didn't know that there'd be this platform years later that we could all kind of watch something on demand.
Yeah.
That surfaced about 10 years ago on Christmas Day of all days. And I remember watching that going, wow, that really was something special.
Yeah. And sometimes a band can be huge at the time and kind of disappear into the ether of time then, but there has been a very enduring legacy, hasn't there? To the point where, like, you can get a Nirvana t-shirt, the kids get them in H&M and stuff now.
Absolutely. Still, probably pennies at this
brand
stage.
With the emo young people, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. No, it's just such an iconic band logo, even, and a t-shirt, and it's just, you know, Dave Grohl has obviously kind of gone on to other things, you know, kind of in fronting Foo Fighters, and his career has kind of, gone from strength to strength. Chris Novoselic has kind of disappeared into the background a bit. I spoke to him a couple of years on the 20th anniversary of the release of Nevermind, and he said something very, he was Kurt's best friend, he said something very sweet, that every time somebody tells me that they love Nirvana or love Nevermind or Teen Spirit, I chalk one up for Kurt. I remember just how committed he was, how focused and how compelled he was to create. And I think sadly, in losing that, as his suicide note kind of goes into, that he just felt like he was punching a clock. He felt like he was doing this in bigger and bigger and bigger arenas But his the love for the music and the creation of the music had completely been sucked out of him.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
lots of different reasons.
Okay, look, that's a sad, apocryphal tale. Eamon Sweeney, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.